I'm Jamie Floyd from In Session, filling in for Brian Lehrer. Given that this week is special to Jews and Christians, it is Passover and today is Good Friday after all, we thought we'd talk about their shared religion, Buddhism. Seriously, given contemplation being the order of the day, we're going to check in on the practice of mindfulness. Gabriel Cohen was here to talk about his book, Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, A Buddhist Path Through Divorce, and he's back in this moment to talk about one way to deal with life's stresses and difficulties. Great to see you, Gabe. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So talk to me about mindfulness. How is it connected to Buddhism? Is it another word for meditation? We hear that phrase, being present in the moment. How do they connect, and what does mindfulness mean?
Well, it's related to Buddhism because I think of Buddhism more as a psychology than a religion. At least that's how I apply it. But you don't have to be a Buddhist at all to be mindful. Actually, there's been a lot of scientific research recently. There's a professor at UMass named Jon Kabat-Zinn that has developed a technique of mindfulness that's really helpful for things like chronic pain, stress, anxiety, chronic depression. So you can be a Buddhist and practice it, but you can not be a Buddhist and practice it.
So mindfulness is something very different from thoughtfulness.
I think people get confused because you often hear this slogan that mindfulness means be in the present moment, and that's kind of confusing. And I have to admit that when I hear that, I often think, hey, what if I don't want to be in the present moment? And frankly, when I feel that is when I'm having some kind of uncomfortable thought or feeling, like I'm sad, I'm angry. What we want to do is we want to escape the present moment. We don't want to feel that feeling. So we tend to try to repress it, to pretend it's not there, and that doesn't work because the feeling doesn't go away. Or we try to distract ourselves. We watch TV, or we drink alcohol, or
we eat chocolate
or ice cream. We try to just distract ourselves to pretend that we're not feeling it, and the feeling doesn't go away.
Why not? I mean, why doesn't it work to simply escape? Escapism is one of those old tools of coping.
Because if we don't really acknowledge what we're feeling, we're not dealing with it in any real way, and it's still there. And if we try to pretend it's not there, often our body tells us it's there because we end up having back pain or other problems that show it's still there.
Now, Gabe, were you raised with this notion of mindfulness, or is this something you came to? And, of course, now I'm referring back to your book, Storms Can't Hurt the Sky. Is it something that you came to through recent life experiences?
It's something that's pretty recent to me, and I'm actually very excited about it because in my book, Storms Can't Hurt the Sky, I talked about the experience of how Buddhist practice helped me get through a really difficult divorce. And just recently, I've started getting a much better understanding of what mindfulness really means. And I can give you a kind of funny example. I just started doing online dating. And when you do that, you don't really know very much about the other person because you've never met if you're trying to arrange a date. So let's say that I email a woman and I say, hey, let's get together. And often what happens is that she doesn't reply. And so what I start doing is I instead of just saying, okay, that makes me feel a little uncomfortable, I'm a little disappointed, I'm a little hurt, what we tend to do is we sort of spin out into thoughts. We take the feeling and then we project them into thoughts. And what I might start thinking is, okay, this woman didn't respond because she finds me unattractive. And then I start thinking, well, maybe I am unattractive. And then I start thinking, gee, maybe I'm really unlovable. And then I start thinking, gee, maybe I'll never get a date. And look what happened. We just started with this really simple thing. This woman didn't email me back. And I'm projecting all these judgments about myself and projecting the whole thing into the future. And then 3 days later, I get an email from this woman, and she says, oh, sorry, I was out of town and didn't get your email. So all those thoughts that I built up are causing me to suffer, and they weren't real.
It's wasted energy.
Absolutely.
But isn't mindfulness all about confronting some of those very thoughts you were having?
It's the idea that instead of trying to avoid painful thoughts or feelings, that we can just sit with them and not spin out into all those kind of fantasies and worries about the future and judgments about, like, I'm feeling bad, that means there's something wrong with me. Instead, we can just get in touch with what's really going on in our body and say, okay, I'm feeling a little bit of sad right now. It's not going to kill me. I don't have to spin up into all this other stuff and adding suffering. The Buddha said a great analogy. He said that sometimes life shoots an arrow into us, like we might get sick or we have a problem with somebody at work or we have something like a divorce. That's a big arrow. And he said what we tend to do is we shoot a second arrow into ourselves. We add to our suffering by adding all of this judgment and spinning out into thoughts.
Well, let me then ask you with some trepidation about a column I read in the New York Times. Judith Warner on the Times website wrote about mindfulness from a very different perspective and struck a little bit of a nerve, I would say, in the mindfulness movement. She concludes that mindful is too often another word for disengaged. Do you agree?
No, I thought that was a really I'm trying to be tactful here. I thought that was a really unfortunate column because it basically spread a lot of misconceptions that people who are mindful are repressing their feelings or that they're, she said, actually used the phrase checked out from the world, and also that they tend to be kind of dull and humorless people. And I just thought that was unfortunate because it was actually the opposite. In almost every case, what she was saying was the opposite of the reality.
Hmm. And so it is not a form of disengagement. It is actually to engage, but
absolutely,
not to project.
Absolutely. It's to be present, aware of what you're feeling, aware of the world around you, aware of other people. It's not about checking out at all.
All right. I want to invite calls from our listeners. If you practice meditation, if you have thought at all about mindfulness, or even if you haven't, feel free to call in and let us know, and let us know whether you agree with what you're hearing or not. And can you keep your edge? That was part of what she talked about, and still be mindful. Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can post a comment on our website at WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. How about this notion of edge? Are you going to lose your edge here in New York or in New Jersey or in Connecticut and not be able to live in our very highly structured society if you're too mindful?
Well, she was making this argument that people who are angry are more interesting because they have a sort of edge and a liveliness. And when I heard her say that, it immediately made me think of where I've heard that before. And it applies to what people say about alcoholism. They say that alcoholics are fun to be around, and if they go to rehab, they're going to become these drab, dull, humorless people. But that's totally ignoring the fact that alcoholics are really suffering, and they're also spreading suffering all around. So you look at the front page of the newspaper every morning and you see the effects of unmindfulness. It's anger, and it's causing abuse, it's causing assault, it's causing divorce, it's causing war. There's nothing cool and edgy about anger.
Let me ask you a very specific question. It may strike you as an odd one, but do you have to sit on the floor in a cross-legged position with your hands on your knees and your thumbs pressed against your forefinger to meditate? Or can I meditate anywhere? Can I meditate on the subway? Can I be mindful as I'm walking down the street? Or do you have to be in that quiet space with some low New Age music playing in the background?
You don't have to have candles or New Age music. It helps to learn mindfulness by being in a quiet place in the beginning. But ultimately, when you get a little practice with meditation, you can do it on the subway. You can do it walking down the street. There's something called walking meditation, where you just use becoming more aware of your walking to pull you back into the present if your mind is spinning out into all those worries and thoughts.
What if your problems are material, Gabe? What if you lose your job? What if you are worried about living paycheck to paycheck, or you can't even do that, and now we have an economic crisis, people losing their homes? Is this going to be helpful for people with very concrete concerns who may not feel they have the time to be mindful because they're too busy worrying about how they're going to make their payments and pay their bills?
Well, obviously, mindfulness is not going to cure the economy or make these external problems go away. But what it does do is it makes it easier for us to deal with those problems, because if we're worried about losing our home in the future, for example, that's spinning out into thoughts. It's not actually happening right now. And we're just, again, shooting ourselves with that second arrow by building up all that stress and worry. And if we just relax and say, okay, this hasn't happened yet, and if it does happen, I'll be calm and I'll be able to deal with it. The worrying doesn't add any value.
No, I certainly hope that my mother is listening to this conversation. She's a worrier. All right, and I know that she is. Let's take a call from Hillside, New Jersey. Sadiqua is on the phone, and I believe you're a meditation teacher. Tell us what you can contribute to our conversation on mindfulness.
Well, I lead a meditation class in Hillside, New Jersey. First, thank you for taking my call. And I'm a big believer of meditation. I kind of came to it because I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have three young children. And just the stress and the daily worries of caring for them is what kind of led me to meditation. And I agree that when you meditate, it slows you down. It helps you to start to find your center. It helps you to find your balance. And I think it's a big proponent to help you to find out how to be present. When you start to become present, you don't feel anxious. You don't feel worry. All of those things that seem like such a big thing now are like small things. You really get to the point where you don't sweat the small stuff. So I'm a big advocate of it, and I think it is one of those healing aspects that we all can benefit from.
Hey, maybe you should have been the guest today.
Our callers are guests. So, Gabe, how about it? Is this something you have to learn over time? Do you have to practice, or are you going to feel mindful after your first endeavor?
You have to practice. And one thing that I should point out is that I think most people, including myself, feel kind of frustrated when we try to learn how to meditate, because usually the idea that people have is that meditation means clearing your mind of all thoughts. And if we look at it that way, we're bound to fail at it. Because if you try, you'll sit down for 2 minutes and you try to clear your mind of thoughts, you're going to find all these thoughts popping up. So if we think, oh, God, you know, I'm thinking, so I'm failing at meditation, then we're going to stop meditating. But the exciting idea of mindfulness is that just becoming aware of those thoughts popping up means that we're actually succeeding at meditation. It's not about not thinking anything. It's about becoming more aware of how we think, so we don't have to get sort of shoved around by what we're thinking or feeling.
I know you host the book series at Sonny's Bar in Red Hook. I have to tell you, I found Nirvana there at the fairway in Red Hook, sitting out looking over the water where the ferry comes in. Is that mindful, just sitting there, taking in the surroundings, being aware of our surroundings, or is that not quite enough?
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt. I mean, it's better than sitting there in front of that beautiful view and worrying about, you know, some future thing. At least you were there. You're enjoying what was right in front of you. And basically, you were living your life in that moment and getting pleasure out of that. So that's great.
And you write mystery novels that are set in places like Red Hook, in these gritty urban environments. That doesn't seem really to connect to this Buddhist mindfulness philosophy, or does it somehow?
Well, it's interesting because I have a new book called Neptune Avenue that's coming out in a couple weeks, and I was just thinking about this issue: does that connect with Buddhism or mindfulness? And it occurred to me the other day that really the themes are sort of the same as what Buddhism is about. I have this homicide detective in Brooklyn, and he's dealing with stuff like mortality and impermanence, and the idea that things aren't necessarily what we think they are. So that I don't like to like explicitly try to sneak Buddhism into my mystery novels, but it's there.
Hmm. And I look forward to that next one. Now, we're going to do a story later and take calls about that whale that was off track and in New York Harbor. And we know that Herman Melville, found great symbolism in whales. And we're going to ask our listeners what they think it meant that this whale came to visit us. Do you want to weigh in? Do you think about bubbles in the water as we think about bubbles when we meditate, you know, the thought bubbles? Do you think that the whale is a sign of something? How many New Yorkers do you think missed the whale altogether because they weren't mindful of their surroundings?
Well, here's my mindfulness-related answer for today. I would say that whale is the feelings and thoughts that are coming into our lives, and we have a choice. We can be friendly and say, oh, cool, here's a whale. That's really interesting. Let's go check out the whale, or we can pretend that the whale isn't there, and that's that doesn't work too well.
Oh, that's a terrific answer. And as I say, we're going to talk more about the whale in a bit. But it's been such a treat to have you here, Gabe Cohen, of course, wonderful author, new book coming out in a couple of weeks, here talking with us today about mindfulness. And you're going off where, Gabe, right now?
I'm going to the Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health to teach a workshop about it starting tonight.
About mindfulness. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Jamie Floyd. I'm in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up next, we'll check in with Randy Cohen. You know him as the ethicist. He has a new column called Moral of the Story, and we're going to hear all about it coming up next.